Those that aren't here can straggle in. Welcome our January meeting. Just as reminders, please silence your cell phones. Try to take breaks where natural on the agenda, or roughly every 90 minutes. Before we get started in the agenda, I'll ask, is there any suggestions for changes or additions to the agenda as written from council? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to make the council aware that last week Captain Norm Edwards passed away. Captain Edwards, you remember, had come before the council several times talking about the plight of the winter flounder and the problems that we were having here at the council on how to wrangle with management of winter flounder, Southern New England winter flounder. The last time he came to us, based on my memory, I think, was a year ago last June in Portland to talk about a project that he was hoping for support to get funded. And I'm happy to say that that project was funded. It's ongoing right now. Captain Edwards was a passionate supporter of consensus building and problem solving, and unfortunately we lost him last week. So I'll just ask for a moment of silence. Okay, thank you. We'll get into the first agenda item, report on recent activities. Behind tab number one, document number seven, is the executive committee meeting summary. You've had it, was mailed to you in your binders, and hopefully you've had a chance to review it. There are several items in here that are action items, so I'll be looking for motions from the council. Executive committee met on Tuesday, January 4th in Newburyport. We discussed a range of items. The first and most talked about issue was the discussion of groundfish ACL setting process this year to set the specs for the next 2 years. Our SSC was also, executive committee was joined by SSC Chair Steve Cadron. Members from the Science Center, the executive committee was there, as well as technical staff of the council. We came up with an approach that includes three meetings. It's detailed item number one, document number seven. Three meetings to get the SSC and the Science Center in line so that the SSC is prepared to make those recommendations for the next set of specs for groundfish. The second item we discussed was U.S. Canada. As many of you know, and as an enclosure here, number two in this document, the Congress passed an amendment or a change to the U.S. Canada rules that has created an opportunity for our TMGC to meet with our counterparts in Canada and review our current TACs for yellowtail. That meeting has been scheduled for February 9th. We were trying to get that meeting scheduled prior to this council meeting so that we'd have something more to discuss with you, but we had scheduling conflicts with Canada, so that meeting's set for February 9th. I know that the regional administrator will have more to say about this under our groundfish agenda item, but I wanted to make you aware that we're moving as fast as we can to bring the TMGC back together. The third item was a discussion of skate survey data. There's an enclosure, number three, that set up timelines to get the calibration between the Bigelow and the Albatross completed. If you're interested in that, you can look at enclosure three. The fourth item we discussed was a series of issues concerning EBFM and marine spatial planning. The executive committee agreed that the current plan for the council to receive presentations from our SSC about ecosystem-based fisheries management plans was appropriate. The committee also acknowledged that Cape Wind-type projects are moving very quickly and that our efforts as a member of NROC may not be enough, and that the council should also better coordinate with the Department of Interior's BOMER. It was also agreed that a BOMER representative would be invited to a future council meeting to describe planned energy projects in our region. We then talked more specifically about marine spatial planning, and we agreed that we should prepare a series of maps of our region's fishing grounds, essential fish habitat, and hotspots of biomass and biodiversity, which need identification and protection from non-fishing impacts. These maps will help us better represent fishing interests at meetings such as BOMER and NROC. We then talked about SSC membership. The committee approved Mr. Correa, Drs. Chen, Dr. LaGault, Dr. Thunberg, and St. Martin as new members of our SSC. We also discussed potential issues that may arise from members serving on both an SSC and a PDT. We also set lengths of terms to be broken down into 1, 2, and 3 years. Enclosure 4 in this document, number 7, will show you the list of new SSC members. We were also presented with a standard SOPs that need approval from the council. That's enclosure number 5. If you have more questions on that after I finish my report, I think Paul Howard can help there. In addition, the executive committee reviewed and approved nominations on skate and monkfish advisors, and we also approved an additional enforcement and an additional groundfish advisor. Letters have been mailed to those individuals. We then discussed the use of a proxy for AP members, and we've considered and presented you with a written policy. We agreed that language should be added to our existing AP policy that would state that no proxies are allowed for AP members. That will require a vote of the council, too. Then we discussed a change to the election process policy for executive committee members. The committee discussed and recommended a change to the policy for approval of executive committee members by the council. That's enclosure 7. That will also require a vote. And then the council reviewed timelines and management options for all of our upcoming and ongoing FMP developments. The committee reviewed management timelines and agreed that the council committee and PDT chair should revisit the herring amendments monitoring objectives for the purpose of refocusing and tasking the PDT with developing alternatives to meet those objectives. It was agreed that the chair, PDT, and herring chair will have a conference call to discuss this, and the herring committee meeting scheduled for January 2011 should be we'll talk more about that tomorrow under herring. That's the big agenda item for tomorrow. So as I said, that's the range of issues that the executive committee discussed, looking for 3 votes, one on number 7, one on number 9, and one on number 10. Again, we're in document number 7 with enclosures. First, I'll entertain any questions on the report. Okay, seeing none, Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just a little unorganized when you started there. Do you mind just reviewing number 7 briefly? I think I missed that part.
Paul, you want to do that? The SOPs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. number 7 is agenda item to discuss and approve the SOPs. I brought the standard operating procedures for the council to the executive committee, and they recommended they go to full council. As part of our the Magnuson Act, we're required to submit how we operate, what are our employment practices, what are our voting procedures, just administrative stuff that's basically in the act. And NIMS gave us a template for what they wanted to see, and so we filled in that template, and all eight councils are submitting their SOPs. The last time we submitted them was 1999. So these are updated with new Magnuson Acts, and as you've reviewed them, they're just basically administrative stuff, how we operate on the council in accordance with the Magnuson Act. It's a requirement in the Magnuson Act for us to submit how we operate.
So, Paul, the only question I have is it significant change from where we were before?
No,
or?
No significant changes.
Any further questions? Jim Fair?
Yeah, thank you, John. Could you tell us one more time where this report is? I can't find it. Is it on the disk?
I don't know. I have the hard copies.
Oh.
I don't get the disk.
Okay.
So document number 7 behind tab 1.
I can look. I'll look on with Terry.
Does everyone have it? There's no 7 on the digital copy? All right, how many people need copies? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We need 8 copies around the table. All right, what I'm going to recommend is, since at least half the council wasn't given this collection of documents, there shouldn't be any action taken on them. I'd recommend that we can postpone any action until Thursday under other business, give everyone an opportunity to read the enclosures. The front page of the document tells you the agenda items in the document that we would need to vote on in order for them to become effective. It's 7, 9, and 10. So we'll wait until the end of Thursday to take these issues up. Okay? Anything further under Executive Committee report? John Williamson?
That one works. Yes, John Williamson, representing the Ocean Conservancy's coastal and marine spatial planning efforts. And I just wanted to get up here and reinforce John Papalardo's calling attention to various things that are going on in the marine spatial planning sphere and this council's need to engage fully in processes that are going forward. There are two now that this council should be very much aware of. One is the coastal and marine spatial planning process that has been initiated through executive order out of the White House last June, and that's going forward. The NROC here in New England is strong ties to that planning process. There will be a planning body that will be organized over the next year, and that will begin to assemble information on marine environments and economic uses of marine environments to be able to begin to sort out policy as far as how these marine environments are going to be used and developed over the next decades. That's coastal and marine spatial planning effort. That's by executive order. Additionally, Congress in 2005 passed the Energy Policy Act of 2005 that initiates the Department of Interior the authority to initiate an expedited permitting process for wind power development offshore. I mean, there's a lot in the Energy Policy Act from 2005. That is one aspect of it. That process now is beginning to play out. We're starting to see these efforts happening at different states on both three coasts of this country and in New England and Mid-Atlantic. We're seeing BOEMRE teaming up with state agencies to create task forces in various states that are then, at this point, are beginning to make proposals as far as areas off of these various states that might be used in the future for an expedited permitting for wind power development. And in the last month, on December 28th, I believe it was, Massachusetts and BOEMRE released a proposal for 2,224 square miles of area off of Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, and South that is proposed for possibility of expedited wind power development in the not-too-distant future. There's also, that is a comment period that was opened on, started in the end of December, and it carries through to February 28. And there's a real need to get information about fisheries into that process. It's an accelerated NEPA process for developing an EA. This has already taken place off of Delaware. There was a process last spring off of Delaware and a similar one last summer in Maryland. We're probably seeing similar proposals coming forward for Rhode Island, New York, New Jersey. Okay, and there's a need to get fisheries information into those processes. What I'd like to make a distinction with today, just carry forward to people's attention, Ocean Conservancy is actually very much in favor of wind power development offshore, but there is also a need to sort through the issues, prioritize where wind power development occurs versus other uses, and environmental impacts. Okay. There's a push in D.C. going on now to try to get the Department of Interior's process to merge and or at least coordinate with the marine spatial planning efforts out of the White House. We'll see where that goes over the next few months. The DOI process is a non-FACA process. It's between the BOEMRE and the various state agencies. And so that it isn't something that is terribly transparent or open to the public. And so that's another reason why this council should be paying close attention to it. So if anybody has any questions on it, please feel free to seek me out at the break and we can talk.
Thanks, John. Okay, moving on, Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple things. The next meeting of NROC, the Northeast Regional Oceans Council, is February 3rd in Boston. I'll be attending that. There is a national workshop for ACLs sponsored by NIMS in Washington, D.C., where all the SSCs and council folks we'll meet in Washington to discuss ACLs, and that's February 15th to 17th. Our council has nominated Steve Cadron, Mike Sissonwine, and Dr. Pierce to attend that ACL workshop in February. In January, from January 10th to the 13th, Chairman, Vice Chairman, and I met with all the eight councils in Washington, D.C. to discuss budget and other issues. Budget, we're on a continuing resolution until March 4th, so we'll know what our 2011 budget is on or after March 4th. And basically the news on 2012 was that that is before is being worked on now is very bad, as that's all we got. We have council has hired George LaPointe on a part-time basis to help us work on the Catch Shares workshop. And as we receive the NRCC summaries, the NRCC meets twice a year. It usually takes several months to get the summaries out. I'll make sure that the council gets copies of those summaries. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Paul? Terry?
Yeah, Paul, what's the status of the implementation of the audio stream?
Pat, I want to talk about.
Yeah, Pat, I'm looking for an update on the status of the implementation of the live audio stream.
Actually, we were going to do a dry run here today, and we had an appointment with, we were looking at WebEx, seriously, but because the woman couldn't keep her appointments due to the weather, we're not doing it today, but we are in the process of experimenting with it on a committee meeting rather than a council meeting. We probably won't advertise the first use of it in case there are any giant glitches, which there could be, I understand. So we'll start with a couple of committee meetings very soon, this month or early next month, but probably this month, to get it going, because a lot of people are interested in it, especially with the weather. So, but we're a little bit behind because of that exactly.
So is the goal to make it operational for our April meeting?
Oh, yes. If we're not operational for our April meeting, we're going to be in trouble. But, no, I think it'll be fine. There are a couple of different options we were looking at as well, and we finally settled, I think, on WebEx as the ultimate solution.
Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, Paul, you mentioned that George LaPointe is being a hard part-time to work on the Catch Shares workshop. I'm glad to hear that George is involved. Perhaps you mentioned it before I came in. What is the timing for this workshop? Where is it going to be held?
We're just starting the planning. George came aboard Monday, so we haven't, my gut tells me it'll be October. That was a good time to have it, and we've got a lot of planning to do to have it, but we haven't started the planning for it yet. This is the not the groundfish workshop for sectors, but this is the workshop to discuss community impacts and community involvement with catch shares, permit banks, community fishing associations, that type of thing.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, this is a workshop then that is being co-sponsored with the National Marine Fisheries Service, with the social sciences branch, for example. Are there any details regarding this workshop someplace in the binder, the web?
Excuse me. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The only information is the council voted it as a priority, and I brought George aboard to plan to meet that priority. So we'll establish a steering group like we did for our last one and start the planning and keep the council informed.
Jimmy?
Yeah, that was kind of along the lines I had. And so the steering group will develop goals and objectives of the workshop, or should the council be involved in developing goals and objectives?
Thank you, Jim. Whatever the council wants, just go through the chair, and it's your priority to run this workshop. So the last workshop we had, John, myself, we had a project officer on staff, and Kenny, what's her first name? Amy Kenny from Environmental Defense, or Duke Sustainable Fisheries, led that side of it. So we would have steering committee meetings every month to progress for that workshop. So I imagine we'll have one, and John and I and George will be on it. There's no outside support for this. This is totally the council. I will be asking NIMS for funding.
Yeah, I just, I think it's important to develop some goals and objectives and have the council take a look at them and then maybe add or at least discuss the goals and objectives at some point before you get too far down the down the planning process.
Yeah. Would you want the executive committee to come up with a straw man set of goals and objectives and bring them to the council in April?
That would be an approach.
And then we can have a discussion at the council about said goals and objectives? Okay. Paul, you got that? Any other questions for Paul? Okay, seeing none, we'll turn it over to NIMS Regional Administrator.
Okay, that'll work. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat Kirkle will be here later this morning or early this afternoon, but she asked me to give a report for her this morning. And it's a fairly short one, actually. Under multi-species, we will soon be publishing a proposed rule for the 2011 fishing year sectors. This is proposing the sector operations plans for public comment. The final deadline for receipt of fishing year 2011 sector operations plans was September 1st, and the final deadline for the receipt of sector rosters was December 1st. 2010. We received 22 operations plans that proposed 16 active sectors and 6 lease-only sectors, including 4 state-run permit banks. And as of that date, December 1st, there were 834 permits enrolled in sectors. Of course, they have until the beginning of the fishing year to change their mind. Overall, 58% of the Northeast multi-species permits were enrolled, and that accounted for almost 99% of the historical fishing effort in the groundfish fishery. Also under review is Framework Adjustment 45. The Council took final action on those measures on November 18th. We received the final Council's framework document yesterday, and the proposed rule regulations have been deemed to be necessary for publication, and we are currently trying to get that rule, proposed rule, published as soon as possible so that we can make our May 1st, 2011 implementation date. As the chairman already mentioned to you, on January 5th, the International Fisheries Agreement Clarification Act was signed into law by President Obama. That will provide us additional flexibility for the U.S. to cooperatively manage Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder with Canada, by allowing rebuilding periods of longer than 10 years, as well as some conditional flexibility in setting the annual catch limit. Also, as John mentioned, on February 9th, there will be a meeting of the Council's Transboundary Management Guidance Committee. I believe that's going to be a conference call, actually, to discuss revising the Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder shared tax for fishing year 2011. And we're currently looking at ways to be able to implement whatever changes might result from that as quickly as possible. On days at sea leasing activity in the groundfish fishery, as of the 20th of January, for the common pool leases, we processed a total of 39. 38 of those have been approved, impacting the total number of permits of 47. The total days at sea transferred in the common pool were 512 at an average cost per day at sea of $172. On the sector side, we had processed 76 leases. 62 of those have been approved, involving 89 distinct permits, total of 1,797.8 days at sea have been transferred, and the average cost for days at sea leased in sectors was $73.35. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Questions for Gene? Dr. Pierce?
I've got two questions, George. And if you can't give me an answer now, then later on during the course of today's meeting is fine, certainly when Pat comes back, because you may not have been involved in some of these discussions. It's my understanding that the service, Pat in particular, had a meeting or meetings with sector managers to discuss how discards discards within sectors are being treated, and to respond to some concerns expressed by sector managers about that procedure. Maybe some updates were given. I understand a presentation was provided to a sector manager or managers. So my question is, was there any what was the outcome of that particular meeting relative to how discards are being treated? Were the sector managers' concerns addressed to their satisfaction? And if there's a written presentation, could council members have a copy of that, since it's of great concern to all of us, and how are discards being treated as they count against the sector's ACES?
Yeah, if it's the meeting I'm thinking of, was this last week? I was not at it. Pat was, and Frank Almeida from the center was. So I can only speak to it generally. There was concern about a particular discard rate of a particular gear type. And it was kind of an anomalous situation, actually. But this particular sector and sector manager were concerned, have been for some time, about how that was treated. I think the facts were presented, the explanation of why it was being done that way, and making the point that all the sectors were being treated the same way. The outcome was, I think there was a greater understanding between the sector and the sector manager and the agency on how that was being done. I'm not sure that there was agreement that was the best way from the sector's point of view, but as far as written product, I'd have to check on that. I don't know.
Okay, I know I would appreciate some sort of a written summary as to what happened at that meeting and the outcome recommendations, since obviously it's of great concern to us as council members as we move forward with sector management and improvements of how we deal with discards. My second question relates to a point that you made about the U.S.-Canada resource sharing, understanding the impacts of the new legislation. In the Executive Committee report in Closure 2, there's a summary of the impacts of the legislation, and my question is relative to the fourth bullet in that list. Again, in Closure 2 in the Executive Committee meeting summary, where the fourth bullet says something quite important. Practically, this legislation allows a rebuilding period based on FMSY, a nuance not addressed in the legislation is what is the starting date for such a period. Presumably, we can set a new starting date or else the legislation is not useful. It's a very important statement. Obviously, Congress passed this legislation was enacted for a very specific purpose. I'm hoping that the service will interpret, if it's not clear, interpret the legislation as indicating that we can start a new starting date. Otherwise, the legislation is not useful, and frankly, that would be a great embarrassment to Congress, I would think, and certainly a great disservice to the fishing industry here in New England and elsewhere. So that's my question. Where is NIMS with regard to this particular point? Is the service going to move forward with an understanding that we can set a new starting date?
I don't think I could answer that right now. Gene may be able to. He's been involved in this process more than I have, but I'm not sure that decision has been explicitly made. Gene, can you help?
No, I can't. You know, we haven't got into it. I just had to take a call. Are you talking about setting a new date for Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder in light of the legislation?
I didn't state the stock, but yeah, that would likely be the one we would first focus on. So the new legislation, Georges Bank Yellowtail, implications of the legislation for that particular stock, and in particular, I certainly would encourage the service to, if it's unclear, I'd have to go back now and look at the legislation to see if it is unclear, but I would encourage the service to indeed set a new starting date that would be consistent with the intent of Congress. Otherwise, what has been done after all this time, all this effort? And, of course, much has been said to the fishing industry in New England regarding all of the positive benefits of this legislation, how much good we'll get out of it. So we're going to have a new starting date. So the word presumably should probably be struck, and we should move forward with a new starting date would be set. So, again, that's just my personal perspective, and it's a reminder to the service and everyone involved in this initiative that we should not do Congress a disservice by assuming that there will not be a new starting date because, the legislation would not be useful.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I don't know if you need a new starting date or a new ending date. I mean, I don't know if you have to do the first part of it. Because I think the legislation would allow us to extend the rebuilding period beyond the 10 years. So whether that entails a new starting date or not, I think has to be looked at, whether that makes sense or whether you can achieve the same result by just extending the rebuilding period using the original starting date.
Again, Mr. Chairman, I'm just reacting to this particular page, and I don't know who prepared this page. Maybe it was staff. So I'm assuming it's accurate. Perhaps it's not. Anyways, I've expressed my concern.
Just so you know, Dave, that I believe this page was prepared by council staff, and these were a series of questions that were available to the executive committee. We did ask. We had very much the same dialogue at the executive committee about this issue as well as several others. So those are ongoing questions that we desperately need answers to. Anything further for George? Okay, moving on. NOAA General Counsel, Gene.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no new lawsuits to report. This Thursday, there is an oral hearing for the appeal taken by the plaintiffs in the challenge to Scallop Amendment 11, which was decided in favor of the government on all counts. That was appealed to the Third Circuit. Briefs have been filed, and there is a three-judge panel that will hear that oral hearing in Philadelphia on Thursday. And in fact, I'm planning on going down there, barring weather problems, Thursday morning to attend the hearing along with the DOJ appellate attorney that's handling that case. Massachusetts filed an amicus brief in the lawsuit challenging Amendment 16 a week or two ago. The current schedule for that lawsuit for briefing is that the plaintiffs filed their motion for summary judgment on November 19th. The government's motion for summary judgment in opposition to that motion is to be filed at the end of this week on January 28th. The plaintiffs have an opportunity to reply to our opposition on February 14th, and our reply is due on March 2nd. And we've had a couple of extensions from the original order, and I believe the hearing has been scheduled for 2 weeks from our reply date, which is around March 16th. But it's mid-March date around there for an oral hearing before the judge. Now, the oral hearing date could definitely change depending on whether the judge feels she needs additional time to consider the briefs or not. But that's the working schedule for the challenge to Amendment 16. Now, I can't remember if this happened before or after our last meeting, but with respect to the other, let me just back up a little bit. The lawsuit challenging Amendment 16 has consolidated two cases, one that was originally filed in New Jersey and the original case that was filed in Boston Federal District Court. So those two cases are consolidated and being considered at the same time by the judge. The government also moved to transfer the Oceana v. Locke case, which was filed in the D.C. District Court, to the Boston Court. The D.C. District Court denied that motion and has set up a scheduling for motions to be filed in that lawsuit. The plaintiffs, Oceana, have until January 31st to file any motion to supplement the administrative record. Then the government would have an opposition to any such motion. There hasn't been any filed, by the way, but if there is one filed, the government has till February 21st to respond to that motion, and then the plaintiffs have a reply brief due on February 28th. That has to do with motions for supplementing the administrative record. If the plaintiffs do not seek supplementation of the record, the plaintiffs are scheduled to file their motion for summary judgment on March 11th, and the government would file their cross motion and opposition by April 15th, and reply briefs would be due by May 13th, 2001. I told you that the government had filed a notice of appeal in the Western CV Locke case. That was a challenge to Amendment 1 in the Herring of the Herring FMP. That case was challenged by some vessels on grounds that the permit-splitting prohibition was unlawful. The court found in favor of the plaintiffs in that case, meaning that the court agreed that the permit-splitting provision was not consistent with Madison-Stevens Act, and ordered issuance of the appeal of the permits that were denied based on reliance on a split permit history. That is the decision that the government has filed a notice of appeal on. At this point in time, we're in discussions with plaintiffs to see if there's any room to settle that case before going forward with the appeal on it. And so that's still pending, that decision. I think that's it in terms of any further developments in the lawsuits that are before the agency at this time. So that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Gene? Thank you, Gene. Moving on, Northeast Fisheries Science Center. Dr. Jim.
Thank you. thank you, and good morning. Good morning, everyone. The center report today will cover survey issues and then stock assessment. Then I'll talk a little bit about some work that we're doing in a large group of us working on the assessment process that we use in New England. And then there's a one-page sheet that was handed out to you on the SBRM prioritization process, and I'll spend a few minutes talking about that. So first, the survey report. The 2010 autumn multi-species bottom trawl survey, as you know, was completed in early December. And the center got several requests to expedite the auditing of the data for certain species. And we complied with that and were able to provide the data as rapidly as we could for skates and butterfish. And then I'd also like to mention that during the survey, we picked up a large number of small haddock on George's Bank. And these are the zero-year class. I believe they're around 14 to 16 centimeters in length. These are unaudited data for haddock still, and we don't really know how large the year class will be. But I just wanted to give people a heads up that there is likely to be an above-average index for recruitment coming in the next year or two. And I don't really have any more details on that, and I just wanted to let you know that this is something that's likely to be on the horizon. On I've mentioned this before, that we're doing some collaborations with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada on their trawl gear. And the idea is that they're testing the same kind of trawl gear that we use on our survey. And if they like that and get it working in a way that satisfies them, then we'll be using the same gear for surveys all the way from North Carolina up through our waters and into Canada, which will be a good thing for consistency and comparing surveys of transboundary stocks. The survey schedule, we have a busy spring, summer coming up. I'll just mention a few surveys. The spring bottom trawl survey will begin on February the 28th. The sea scallop dredge survey will begin on May the 11th. The clam dredge survey on the Delaware will begin on July the 5th. I believe that'll be the last Delaware survey with the doing clams. And then there's a northern shrimp survey that'll begin on July the 18th. The survey group is also working on looking at more high-tech ways of doing surveys. And there are a couple of pilot projects that are planned in April. There will be one using autonomous underwater vehicles. And in June of 2011, the HABCAM system will... There'll be research done on that. Moving on to stock assessments, the SARC 51, which took place in late November and early December, I'll be reporting on that later today, but they were benchmark assessments for Lalago and three of the hake species. All told, this SARC had six different stocks on it, so it was a very busy peer review. Then scheduled for this spring will be SARC 52, which will be the week of June the 6th. And on that SARC, the three winter flounder stocks are on the agenda: the Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank, and Southern New England. We will also be supporting the New England Council and the regional office on the multi-species the calculations that need to be done for the biennial ACL adjusting for adjustments. And that was already mentioned either by John or Paul earlier regarding the executive committee meeting. Then there will be tracks this spring, summer for the Georges Bank stocks that are shared with Canada. And then we also have a number of updates primarily for the Mid-Atlantic stocks. Then I'll just mention SARC 53, which will be November-December of 2011, and on that we have Gulf of Maine cod and black sea bass. Now a few words about the this working group that I've been involved with. We call it the ACL Working Group, and this has basically started about 2 years ago, where when the Magnuson Act was reauthorized, a number of us realized that we were struggling to try to keep up with all of the assessment duties that we had to do with benchmarks and annual updates. So this kind of started as it grew out of the Science Center, and when we spoke with people at the regional office and both councils, we quickly realized that we were all in this together. So this has evolved into a rather large group that is kind of overseen by the NRCC. And we're in the process now of there are several different like working groups that are working to try to basically redesign the assessment process that we use in New England to try to make it more efficient and try to make better handoff between what the Science Center does and the SSCs, the councils, ASMFC, and the regional office. So I co-chair one of these working groups with Richard Merrick, who's the division head of that I work in. And the our membership includes staff from the Science Center, the regional office, both councils, the SSCs, and the ASMFC. And our group is developing a new framework for how we do stock assessments. And so we're all accustomed kind of to the SAW-SARC process that we've had for several years. And but we're going to be making some recommendations to modify that. And the tasks that we're focusing on are the assessment schedule and the frequency of assessments and how we prioritize different stocks on the schedule. We're also talking about what we call operational assessments, which are when you have a good working model, these will be assessments that are kind of like what we call updates now, where the work can be done more simply by fewer people and require less peer review and go more quickly because they'll be using methods that have been approved in a previous peer review. And then there will be a separate research track, which will be more similar to the kind of intense peer review that we now have in the SAW-SARC process, where new models can be evaluated in great detail. And then once they are approved, they will eventually become the accepted model that will be used in the operational track. So this will could involve a revamp of how quickly and how frequently we do different assessments and the kind of information that will be coming out. But it's all meant to improve what we're doing so that we can all know what's coming and we can work together better. So we've had a few meetings. We will meet again as a working group in early February. And then all of this will be presented in a white paper to the NRCC this spring. So stay tuned for that. And I will try to keep you posted on when it actually is close to being implemented. But I don't think this is going to happen within the next year, but it shouldn't be too much longer than a year or year and a half. Then the final thing I want to discuss is the SBRM, this reporting methodology. As you know, every year, as required by the amendment, the SBRM amendment, the requirement is that the center, and now with the regional office in cooperation, produce an annual prioritization report of observer sea days to the various types of fishing gears and locations along our coast. And in the past, Wendy Gabriel or Paul Rago has come to you and with a small report, and they've explained it's basically a proposal of how the observer days will be allocated. This year, back in October, we knew that there were going to be some delays in being able to produce the report, and this was discussed with the NRCC back in October, so they understood that there would be a delay. And so the report has basically just come out, and this one sheet that I handed out to you, I think you all have it at the table, that says Standardized Bycatch Reporting Methodology. It has information about this report that has just come out. And so Paul Rago and Wendy Gabriel aren't here to discuss it because it just came out. And what I'm trying to do is provide a way forward so that you'll have a chance to look at it and provide feedback back to the center and the regional office staff so that we can then consider your comments and then make adjustments to it. So on this sheet, there's a website which lists where the documents will be available to the public. The SBRM C-Day analysis and prioritization for 2011, it's about a 25-page document, and that's the one that will contain the proposal, basically, from the service on how the observer days will be allocated. And then, and this is something that we've provided to you now. This is the third year. The what we'd like to get back are comments from the council by March the 4th, because all of this gets implemented on April the 1st. So we have to have some time to consider the comments from both councils and then make some revisions. There's also a second report, which is very large. It's the annual discard report for 2011, and it indicates that it's about 1,100 pages. And these are detailed tables that have all the information that's basically laid out as a requirement in the amendment that it be reported every year. And what we're proposing this year under number 2 on this sheet is that we set up a webinar to discuss this prioritization report with both councils. And we've already mentioned this to the Mid-Atlantic Council, and they're on board with it. So we're going to be, you know, basically setting this up with your staff so that we can have a webinar between the folks who actually have produced the report that can answer your questions. And then this would be a public webinar, and members of your council could attend, call in, and participate on this call. And then that could lead to written comments being drafted and sent to the center and the regional office. So we're proposing to hold this webinar sometime after the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting, which is February the 8th to the 10th. So stay tuned for more on that. We will be contacting you to try to set up a good date for that webinar. Then finally, there's a three-year report that's also called for in the SBR amendment. And this is the first time that we'll be producing that report. And that's one that contains information which is actually more along the lines what you've been asking for each year, where you'd like to be able to know for a particular fishery how much did it discard. And that information will be in that report. There are several steps to producing that. First, an FMAT has to be established. And it will be comprised of staff from the regional office, both councils, and the Science Center. And they're the ones that are going to be responsible for producing this report. And given the delay in being able to acquire the data this year, we proposed to the NRCC, and they accepted that we divide this up into two parts to complete the work. And the first will be there are a whole bunch of analyses of the data that largely can be completed in April. And so we're proposing that part of the report be done first. And then there are other parts that are in the amendment that require an evaluation of how well the SBRM is actually working. How much bias is there? What is the actual precision? How is the discard information being used, and how is it affecting management? Those sorts of larger questions. And that's going to take more time, and we're roughly saying that work will be completed in the fall of 2011. So thank you. That completes my extended report. And I believe Dr. Thompson will be here around lunchtime.
Thanks, Jim. Questions for Jim? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Jim, the SBRM seeding analysis and prioritization for 2011, obviously it's extremely important for us to know the degree to which funds will be short, enabling the Center to achieve all of its objectives regarding coverage of the fleet. This is especially important for conversations that we'll have tomorrow, I think, on C-Hearing, on the catch monitoring amendment that we are developing. You may have mentioned it, and I didn't hear it. What exactly is the shortfall in funding indicated on your sheet? To what extent will the service and us be behind the eight ball with fewer funds?
Yeah, I myself haven't seen the report yet, so I don't have the answer to your question. Sorry, but I'll try to find out and let you know during the meeting.
Early?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. excuse me. I had two questions for Dr. Weinberg. The first one was in the CLAM survey. Is that going to be Mid-Atlantic and Georges Bank? I think that's what you usually do.
I believe they're going to do the survey in the usual way, where they'll go down the coast first, do the south, and then work up towards Georges Bank. But the plan for the future is to switch to a commercial platform to do the survey, and I believe they're going to be dividing it up into, they'll do a third of the region each year, so that there will, every year the vessel will go out and collect samples, and at the end of 3 years they'll have data on the whole resource, and then they'll have to put that together in an analysis.
Thank you. The next question, you had mentioned this small haddock on Georges Bank. When would they enter the fishery? When would they be large enough to be able to take home?
Yeah, I'm not a haddock expert. I believe they have to grow to somewhere between 18 and 20 inches. So it's a matter of getting from about 14 up to 18, 19, 20 inches. And we'd have to ask a haddock biologist. But I'm thinking it's, what, a year or two or three, somewhere in those, in that range.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Jim, this is a little unique on trying to get the council to agree on a set of priorities of where they want to see the observer coverage and not do it at a council meeting. I still don't know how it's going to work. You know, the council can't meet as a body on the internet and observe what you're doing and make motions and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, we need to develop some process that the council can communicate what its priorities are, given the shortfall in observer funds. But short of that, what is the downside to, I mean, January is the date we usually want this information so we can have the 2011 fishing year all set, but what's the downside of waiting till April, having the council review everything, and the council voting on its priorities at the April meeting? How much do we lose? That, to me, seems like the preferred route to go.
Yeah, I understand the first point you made, and it certainly makes sense from a process perspective. But since time marches on, and the allocation of observers, the year starts on April 1st. So if information comes in from you about making changes, those changes, it might be harder to implement them. And it certainly wouldn't happen in the first month or so of getting your comments. Those changes might be implemented later in the year. So that's the negative side of it.
Anyone else? Mary Beth?
I actually had two questions, but Paul already covered one of them. Jim, just going back to the working group you have to look at redesigning the assessment process, and you had exploring a bunch of ideas about frequency, how you prioritize them, how you deal with updates and the research track. I mean, do you anticipate that you'll be able to streamline your workload so you can review assessments in a more timely manner? Or we've read some things over the course of the past couple of years where assessments might be like on a five-year track versus a three-year track. Is that something you're discussing?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussion about that, and the task that I'm not the chairman, but there is a task group that's actually thinking about the frequency of assessments and how you prioritize them. We did have a facilitated meeting in August to discuss this, and the thinking of the group at that meeting was largely that this should be biology-driven, that some stocks, like ocean quahogs, for instance, have a very slow growth rate, and when we look from one stock assessment to the next, we don't see large changes. So given their biology, they would be a candidate for less frequent assessments. So that's one opinion. Other people who are on the management side or the regulators might be pushing more for certain stocks to be done more frequently. So there's definitely different perspectives on how they should be scheduled. But this is something that's going on. The idea, it's very complicated to make this all fit together. And we are trying very hard. And our group is diverse enough. I think we have membership from all the different groups to get their opinions. But ultimately, we're going to be coming up with some schedule when we implement this so that certain stocks will be done on a predictable schedule, and they won't be done every year. So there will be interim years when there will be no new assessment information, but there will still be surveys going on and the opportunities to examine catch data and survey data, but those will be more to inform the managers and the Science Center about whether there are any red flags that have just popped up. But then on a schedule, things will be coming up for an official review. And that's the time when new research reports will be written. So I guess that's about all I can tell you at the moment.
Thank you. Just one quick follow-up. Jim had said that they're going to produce a white paper and present it to the NRCC, and I guess I would just request that the white paper be presented to the full council as well.
Yeah, I think when we had our NRCC meeting, in fact, Paul or John recommended the same thing. They wanted that report to be done early enough so that it could be shown to the council.
Anyone else on the council? Andy?
Thank you. Jim, we're beginning a process for setting skate specifications, and we're scheduled to present to the SSC and the council recommendations for the 2012 and 13 fishing year in June. One critical element that we need are the dealer data formatted in a way that combines it with the VTR data, what we call the AA tables. Last year, they weren't available till July. For some reasons, they were delayed. Is there an outlook on having those tables available by May of this year?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I think that will be possible. The center would, not only for skates, but for the groundfish work that we have to do, that we have that same desire to have that data provided. So we have been speaking internally and between the center and the regional office to try to get that data earlier. And I believe that you mentioned April or May, and I think we're thinking along the same timeline.
Okay, anything further for Dr. Jim? Thanks, Jim. Moving on, Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council liaisons.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Mid-Atlantic Council met in mid-December in Virginia Beach, weather very similar to what we have here. The council and the ASMSC board voted to increase the scuptel by 92%. This will leave recreational measures basically the same as last year. Black sea bass measures needed a reduction. Size increased to 13 inches, 25 fish possession limit. Open season July 1st to October 1st, and then November 1st till December 31st. That's until the board approves an addendum for regional specifications, and then the federal waters will revert to the same as last year's measures. I'm not sure where that stands with ASMFC. Maybe somebody can give us an update on that. Summer flounder, there was an increase of 33% in the TAL, and both the council and the commission voted for conservation equivalency with the states. The Joint Dogfish Committee met and deleted several things from management measures for Amendment 3. One was sex-specific management measures, and the other one was recreational measures. The target implementation for Amendment 3 is May 1st, 2013. And there was a monkfish public hearing, and if Terry can fill us in on that later. And that was basically it. I'll turn it over to Early. Early?
No, I don't really have anything to add. The only thing I would say is that the Mid-Atlantic Council meets in 2 weeks from today in New Bern, North Carolina, and hopefully we won't have any of this white stuff outside. So we're kind of looking forward to that. So thank you.
Anything further, Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, Frank, my understanding was that the Mid-Atlantic Council was also going to delete limited entry from the mix. I assume they did not do that. It is still one option that is viable. Am I correct?
Yes, I believe so. Why don't we just double-check that? Yes, it still is.
It still is. Interesting. Okay.
Yep.
Council needs to pay attention to that one. Regarding the Black Sea Bass regional specifications, I'll just highlight one point, Frank, and for those who are interested in Black Sea Bass, and I'm sure many of you are, especially from the southern New England area, there's going to be a conference call regarding this particular addendum to deal with Black Sea Bass recreational fishery with the possibility of our actually allocating the recreational fishery between states or regionally, which would be a rather significant step and a rather odd step to take on a conference call, but that's my own personal opinion. I and a few others were very opposed to this particular strategy, that is, taking the recreational fishery for Black Sea Bass and then based on recreational fishery survey information, establishing potentially state shares or regional shares on a conference call. Anyways, it's moving forward. The conference call is apparently scheduled for, I think, the week after next, but it's going to happen soon. So, once again, those who are interested in this should probably call ASMFC's office and find out what's happening, because something big could happen for this particular year relative to recreational shares for Black Sea Bass.
Anything further on Mid-Atlantic? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to U.S. Coast Guard. Captain Pete.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I begin my presentation, Karen, do we? Okay, you're working. Just wanted to make the council, let the council know that Lieutenant Tim Bernott has received orders overseas to Bahrain. He'll be commanding a 110-foot patrol boat over there. So he's started his pre-deployment training, and we won't see him back. He's going to head straight overseas for completion of that training. So good assignment for Tim, and a challenging one as well. For the most recent quarter, the Coast Guard boarded 550 fishing vessels and issued 10 violations for an observed compliance rate of 98.2%, which is just about the same as we were for the last reporting period. On the safety side, the reporting period is slightly different. It's simply an accounting error. From 1 November to 20 January, there were 395 boardings and 53 safety violations. for an observed compliance rate of 86.6%, a lot higher than the previous reporting period, mostly because the bluefin tuna fleet had that fishery had winded down, and we typically see a spike in or a dip in compliance as they convert from recreational to commercial. And we also had 12 vessel terminations during that time. For the same reporting period, we responded to 50 casualties at sea, and those the breakdown is listed on the slide with one life lost and 101 lives saved. Mr. Paul Basick, who's sitting in the corner there, he has a handout summarizing the safety requirements in the 2010 Authorization Act. I think he has some electron microscopes out there so you can actually read this thing, but the copies of those are on the table for all to view as we try and get the word out on that. Again, a lot of regulation development needs to take place before we have any real definitive requirements. And a couple of other notes. It's winter, icing season. If you're having a bad, we've issued a safety alert, as we typically do this time of year when you're having a bad ice day. The safety alert, it lists practical steps to take for commercial fishing vessels both before and during an icing event such as the one you see on the slide. Typically what we do, we just had a recent freezing spray alert that published by the National Weather Service. What we do is we will send out messages, warnings to the boats that are VMS equipped through NOAA OLE, Tim Donovan, and Bill Semerow's shop. And for those other folks that don't have VMS, we fly what we call storm tracks, which is our routine fisheries patrols, and we broadcast on VHFM advising folks of the current weather conditions. We do that for storm warnings, hurricanes, and that sort of thing as well. And we also increase the readiness of our search and rescue cutters during those times. So we're going through that event right now. It should be winding down today. It's pretty cold out there and a lot of wind. So and a copy of that advisory is also on the table in much bigger font and easier to read. And in the non-routine department, I just thought this was interesting to post. We ended up coordinating with NOAA, the Sea Turtle Stranding Coordinator, and the New England Aquarium and the SeaWorld Stranding Network on 12 December to transport 20 endangered Kemp's Ridley sea turtles from Cape Cod down to Orlando, where they will undergo, they check into a rehab clinic down there, and then they get released into the wild after that. So it's a one of our other missions, protecting the living, the endangered species. So, with that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Pete about turtle massage?
Jim? Rehab.
Rehab.
Yeah, and the new safety requirements. There's a couple new requirements. One is ABS class for new construction after 2012. And the other is, and I'm not sure of the year, there's an inspection process for boats that are 30 years old. I think it's starting in 2020. I got two questions. One is, have you guys figured out what the cost of ABS class vessels will be to the construction cost of new vessels, an approximate, you know, so that the industry can figure out what this is going to cost us and what the ongoing cost of a vessel staying in class through its life. And then on the 30-year-old inspection, it's unspecific in the law. So have you guys developed what that inspection is going to ascertain? Because without the industry having a big lead on that, people are going to get caught really short. Boats that may not pass would be basically out of business once that requirement comes in.
With respect to the ABS, I'm not sure, Paul. I don't believe a classification society has been determined yet. So, and again, those regulations, haven't even gone through the proposal process yet, and not really at liberty to discuss regulations that are under development. But your concerns are noted, and I'll convey them with respect to both issues. I understand the lead times involved and the practical impacts of that, but I don't have the specifics for you, Jim. And I'll get them for you as soon as I can, but I don't know if they're going to come in as soon as you want them.
Yeah, I mean, it puts people in a real tough spot. If you start to develop drawings and a contract to build a boat now, it probably takes a year to get that done, and the contract, the timeline is 2012. So we're talking a few months away. So could you check one of the things? If a construction has begun in 2000 and if the contract and construction has begun in 2011, are you grandfathered in existing regulation, or in the boat might be delivered in 2012?
I understand your concerns. Your timelines for construction are much quicker than ours, so we probably are not as sensitive to that. But I'll ask the question and get back to you because I just don't have the information. But I can get back to you.
Just one more point, and you know you've heard me ask this. My concern is that our fleet is 40 years old, and we've got to figure out a way to start reconstructing this industry. And without a lot of lead time, a lot of information, it's going to be very difficult to do.
Understood.
Roddy?
Yeah, to Jimmy's question, I believe that's vessels that start construction after 2012.
Anything further under U.S. Coast Guard? Okay, thank you, Captain. NIMS Enforcement and VMS.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Tim Donovan, NOAA Enforcement. Bill Semro, our VMS program manager, is fighting the flu, which he gave me yesterday, it seems like. So I apologize for my coughing. So I'll cover my report, which is fairly brief, and then I have some highlights from Bill's report. Starting off, the enforcement officers update. We are in the final stages of hiring our new uniform staff of 9 enforcement officers. Deployment will probably begin late spring, early summer, depending on what training requirements are still needed and outfitting these folks. At the national level, the director's vacancy has closed, and applicants are currently being interviewed as I speak. And then looks like we'll probably see a new director for the Office of Enforcement down in Silver Spring sometime in March. Locally, at the regional level, we are going to be advertising a full-time position within the enforcement office to work with this compliance assistance liaison program. Don Mason right now has been TDY to our office and is crafting up a blueprint of what that program will look like. Basically, it's further improvements based on the Inspector General's review on how we can do a better job improving our compliance working with the industry. So I encourage those folks that may be interested in that type of work. I'll get the announcement out to you, Mr. Chairman, and you can pass it on to the council members. Feedback was collected on the priority setting, both at the regional and national level. At this point now, all that data is being collected and reviewed, and I expect drafts for public comment to be posted early March to follow our deadlines that we have set. And that's basically looking at national priorities and then within OLE, the 6 divisional priorities. Finally, on the additional follow-up from the Inspector General's report, on the final report that came out, the Department of Commerce has contracted a special master, Judge Swartwood, to review cases that they felt needed further review, and that's an ongoing process now. The judge has access to all the paperwork he needs, and he has begun his review. At this point, I have no additional data, but maybe by the next meeting, I'll have some feedback on that review. Moving on to VMS, I apologize. I may not be able to answer most of the questions on VMS, but I'll give you Bill's highlights. New vessel-side VMS software will be developed and provided to all Northeast VMS vessel owners in April. Vessels will be required to load and use the new software as of May 1, 2011. Bill's working on their work order for that. Some of the regulatory changes are not yet finalized. He's required to provide a 60-day notice of software changes to the VMS vendors, and as those regulatory decisions are made, he's pushing through the work orders to our new headquarters. Actually, on a second note, folks remember John Pinkerton kind of ran the national program, both the IT and the VMS side. We're kind of, headquarters is kind of changing that. They're going to bifurcate it and have somebody at the national level run all the IT, the computer network and whatnot, and then also have a separate manager at the national level for VMS. I know the first one they're going to fill is the IT position, then they'll be moving on as money allows to fill that VMS program at the national level. He requested that SkyMate owners were concerned that they received their software disks too late, so Bill will coordinate an early release with the vendor, hence why he's meeting these deadlines he set up. And there are about 24 boat track vessels with old units that cannot support additional software changes because they are at capacity with a macro line count, and he intends to notify these owners in the near future and advise them of their replacement options. If there's any questions on VMS, I'll be more than happy to take them and then talk to Bill and the staff and get back to you on those questions. That concludes my report, sir.
Thanks, Tim. Questions for Tim? Thanks, Tim. Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, anything any council members want to bring forward on that? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, just a few things, Mr. Chairman. In your binder, you'll find the summary of all of the ASMFC decisions, some motions that were made, and I'll highlight a few. Quite a bit of, sea herring. ASMFC has approved Addendum 2 to the sea herring plan. Actually, it went to public hearing. I'm sorry, I've got that wrong. But the ASMFC has gone to public hearing with a strategy that would provide for an additional day or two of fishing or landing for small mesh bottom trawl vessels and small purse seine vessels. Public hearings have been held on that particular initiative, and I believe in March a final decision will be made as to whether or not these vessel types, these gear types will actually be accommodated through the sea herring section, specifically Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts, when we establish days of landing for sea herring taken from Area 1A, the inshore portion of Area 1A. Another decision was made, actually a recommendation was made at our meeting for the ACCSP Coordinating Council to allocate funds for a continuation of the Shoreside Sea Herring Sampling Program. As it turns out, that Shoreside Sea Herring Sampling Program is extremely important for accounting for landings of sea herring in New England, certainly, and elsewhere, but certainly in New England. My understanding is that the funds were approved for continuation of that program, and more funds than were requested were actually provided. So that's very good news for this council, especially in relation to our catch monitoring program and concerns expressed by this council about the accuracy of landings of sea herring, especially in New England. So that covers sea herring. On page 6 of the summary of the ASMFC meeting, I wanted to highlight the contribution of council staff, notably Lori Steele, who provided, as she always does, an excellent description of Amendment 5 to the Sea Herring Plan, specifically what's going on with catch monitoring, and in particular what is now in the works currently in Amendment 5 for our dealing with river herring bycatch. So that presentation was provided, and it was very well received. She outlined all the options that will be considered by us tomorrow, I believe, tomorrow. All right. In addition,
David, one second, please.
Yep.
Paul.
Just a quick announcement. If anyone owns a gold Dodge Caliber, with Massachusetts plate 719CL1. You're blocking someone in, and the management would like you to go to your car. Dodge Gold Caliber, Massachusetts plate 719CL1. You're blocking someone.
Regarding the policy board and decisions made by the policy board, a decision was made to incorporate forage fish into the commission process, so forage fish will have a vote at the table. American Lobster Management Board, a major step was taken to deal with Southern New England lobster. In particular, there will be an addendum developed for consideration at the board meeting in March that will include two options, and that one option is a suite of measures that will be considered to achieve a 50% reduction in exploitation Southern New England lobster, and the other option would be a suite of measures for a 75% reduction in exploitation. Dogfish, some of that's already been covered by Frank. I'll only highlight the fact that Paul Howard's concerns about states grabbing a hold of Dogfish through the establishment of state shares was not heeded by the Mid-Atlantic states, certainly by the New England states, but not by the Mid-Atlantic states. A little tongue-in-cheek here, Paul. The expression on your face, you were looking a little perturbed. New York through North Carolina, indeed, they will have state-by-state allocations of the Dogfish resource, regardless of where it's caught, state or federal waters. New England states are not doing that at this time for a number of very good reasons that I won't get into. And then finally, that's it.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to raise that concern one more time about allocating fish to states. It's done without an EIS. It's one of the most important jobs is allocating fish. And I think it's done, like for sea bass, they're going to do it over a phone call and allocate without an EIS. And my fear that I hope some council members share is that that could be done with dogfish and herring without an EIS, because they have ASMSC plans for dogfish and herring. So it's just something that, you know, we should keep on our radar scope, that it's something we should be concerned about.
Anything further? Mary Beth?
Yeah, just on a different issue. You mentioned something about forage fish, and I kind of missed what the reference was there. Something about forage fish coming to the table, but I didn't really know what that meant.
I was trying to be funny, but I wasn't very successful. It was just a simple vote that forage fish will be considered in the commission process, which is a bit of a strange vote because it has been considered in the section in the ASMSC process for, seems like, decades, and certainly the last decade. So it's just to point out that ASMSC has put increased emphasis on the importance of forage fish and any consideration of the setting of quotas, allocation. So the council needs to be aware of that, especially in the context of, you know, what we continue to do, how we continue to plan for management of the sea herring resource.
Thank you for that. And just to Paul's concerns, I certainly share some of those concerns, but I don't know what we do about it.
Anything further under ASMFC? Okay. Just as a reminder, Thursday we'll take up the Executive Committee report once again, so now that you all have a copy of it, please review it. The next agenda item is EFP applications. The council does not have any. 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 Council does not have any council.